Boom, back from vacation, ready to rock and roll. What's going on? It's your guys from Offside, Clark Monroe and James Roberts. Tonight, talking some LA Kings, Toronto Maple Leafs with Dennis Bernstein here in a few moments. But to kick it off, let's just say thank you to Boxing Rock for all their wonderful support. We love them. Thank you, Boxing Rock, the big beer for the big show. And the big show that did not happen, well, it was Team Canada not getting the job done overseas. What an easy segue that was. Womp, 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 womp.
Oh, man.
So it looks like we're going to have a summit on Team Canada. Everybody's freaking out. For me, I say, guys, folks, other nations are building their programs. Other nations are doing better. Other nations are growing what we called our game. So now we need to step our game up. That's as simple as it is. And you can go with the easy route. Well, if we had the Fantillis and the Bensons and the Bedards, we'd win this tournament easily. Well, we didn't. And other teams didn't have their A game and their A talent either. So it is what it is. If it's going to be this way this year, it's okay. We've rebounded nicely before, and we will rebound again. A lot of people throwing a lot of unneeded hate towards Fraser Minton and Mr. Easton Cowan because they're Maple Leafs, and hey, they shouldn't have made the team, and he shouldn't have been the captain, and this, that, and the other stuff. That's a little misguided, if you ask me. It's an entire team. It's a team effort from top to bottom. Rousseau, a guy that I love out here, the Rooster for the Halifax Mooseheads, didn't have his greatest game. It's just what it is. Sometimes you come up on the short end of the stick, you go back to the drawing board, and you come back next year, which is what Team Canada will have to do. And by the way, there's only one team that wins gold anyways. Everyone else goes back to the drawing board. So it's not our year. Chalk it up to that. And also, the refs suck over there. Holy Grandma Doobie out there talking about the refs. Let's go.
Yeah, no, you know what's so funny, James? Every year, there's always that point in the tournament. Every year, even if they're doing well, there's always a point in the tournament where Canadian hockey fans say, you know what, insert my local junior hockey team here, guy, star player, should have been there because they sure could use his scoring ability right now. And there's a lot in Western Canada saying Andrew Kristall, Riley Height, Jagr Furkas should have been there the whole time. He didn't even get in when he got there. Which might not have been by design. I think they probably wanted to play a little bit longer, but that's one thing that I always find it kind of humorous every year in the World Juniors. Just everybody's, I'm from Halifax and this guy should have been on the team. I'm from the Ramparts Nation and this guy should have been on the team. I'm from Kelowna and this guy should have been on the, it's a embarrassment of riches that Canada has available to it in order to make these rosters as strong as they are in the first place. And every single year, there's always going to be snubs, and every single year, there's always going to be hindsight being 2020. But at the same time, this roster just didn't seem to ever have a ton of chemistry to it. Like you said, Rousseau, I thought, played great in net. I don't think any of this was his fault. I saw a couple of the goals against Germany, for example. He kind of got left out to dry, or left out hanging. I think he did his job. Rousseau did his job. I don't think that was, he played every minute of the tournament as well. They didn't give the backup any minutes at all.
Not a chance.
Which I don't, that's not my favorite strategy, because I did read a tweet and I heavily agreed with it. I can't remember who tweeted it, so sorry for the person who did, but I'm stealing your credit. Basically saying, like, now you've put yourself in a position where if your starter does struggle in the quarterfinals, you're putting in a goalie who hasn't played in like 2 weeks. I think that's a good point, where I think the backup should get one game at least so that he's seen some game action going into the playoff rounds in case something happens. But again, that wasn't Rousseau's loss. That wasn't his fault. That was, I thought, just a sloppy game overall. They never got anything going. Their power play wasn't strong enough, considering how much firepower they had available to them. And it's just, it wasn't their year. And like you said, now we're going to have a summit, because that's what happens whenever they don't get past the quarterfinals. You got to have some sort of big danger conference. We got to call things off. We got to look at everything from a grassroots level up, and that's kind of just how, that's how Canada is. But, it's just one of those years. And like you said a minute ago, James, I think this is less about Canada's talent in the sport and more about some of these other countries getting better and better. And maybe Canada taking things for granted a little bit, just a little bit. But, you know, Czechia is a strong country. They have been for a long time and they're getting better. And all these littler countries, Germany gave them a hard time. Latvia, you know, they beat them up pretty good, but it's good to see them there. And, you know, stuff like that. And people keep arguing every year, too, that they don't want this tournament to be as big as it is in terms of teams. I think that's hogwash and I hate that argument. Keep these smaller countries in there because that's how you get these players growing. That's how Leon Draisaitl inspired an entire generation of German hockey players below him, younger than him. And you're seeing those guys continue to come up because of it. And I just think that you need to give these guys these opportunities to shine. And the Cinderella stories to me sometimes are more impressive than the juggernauts running through teams, in my opinion. So I love it. Anyways, that's my overarching everything under the sun Team Canada / World Juniors rant for the day.
We'll be back. But listen, as promised, we do have our friend Dennis Bernstein joining us. I was just emailing him. I saw his message over on X, but we'll bring him on. There he is, the man, the myth, the legend in the LA King lure. What's going on, Dennis?
Hey, James, hey, Clark. Yeah, myth for sure. Not sure, legend. great to be with you. Happy 2024 and happy to talk a little puck with you.
Yeah, happy 2024. Well, let's jump right into it. I know you got a short amount of time here. Obviously, the Maple Leafs out facing the LA Kings tonight. Mm-hmm. The Maple Leafs sputtering themselves. What can they see from the LA Kings tonight that may give them a little bit of good spirit heading into 2024 here?
The Kings' lousy home record?
Probably. I didn't want to say it.
Exactly. Two entirely different teams. And they'll also see this. 1-3-1. They're going to see the 1-3-1 from the Kings. I know the people in Montreal really hate it and think the Kings are a boring team, despite the fact that I think they're third in points percentage and seventh in scoring in the league. But more of the same that you saw in the 4-1 victory in Toronto in November. But for some reason, the Kings just the attention to detail, just the incomplete efforts. They'll have play a great 20 minutes and play a mediocre 40 minutes. The other night against Edmonton, great first period. Went out 2-0, controlled the game, and then just took their foot off the gas pedal. So I think if you're a Leafs fan or any other fan that has half his team that's going into Los Angeles these days, you have a pretty good shot of beating them as opposed to Kings visiting your rink. So that's what you'll probably see with respect to LA tonight.
Now, there's a couple players on the LA Kings that are just thorns in the side of Toronto Maple Leafs fan. One is Philip Deneau. Really finds a way to get his game turned up against the Maple Leafs. And I see Clark's head going back. The other is Pierre-Luc Dubois. For whatever reason, he just does not mix well with the Maple Leafs. They don't like him. Mm-hmm. He doesn't like them. Obviously, can stir the pot with the Toronto Maple Leafs. Who else on this team brings that kind of thing? And I know there's a couple players there, too. Hello, Trevor Moore. Turning it up for LA and a lot of Leaf fans just wishing we had that depth in our lineup right now. But is there anyone else the Leafs should be worried about going into this game that really can bring the intensity? And also, hello, Anze Kopitar.
Yeah. Well, Kopitar has been amazing. There's been no regression in his game, James. He's 36 years old. He's still a point of game player playing 19 minutes a night. Now you talk about Dubois and people are ripping him left and right in Los Angeles because he hasn't earned his $8.5 million price tag. What he has done, he's given Kopitar some relief with respect to the time on ice. Like Kopi was getting like 20, 21 minutes last year. And now he's getting about 19. The other guy you want to watch out is the local kid who had a great game. When his first time he's ever played at Scotiabank is Quinton Byfield, an entirely different player. They've been waiting on this player for two seasons. Last year, 3 goals in 50 games, came in healthy, came in way more confident. He's big. He's fast. He's doing all the things necessary. So Leafs fans got to watch out for that top line of Kempe, Kopitar, and Byfield. And, yeah, Deneau has carried over his angst for the Leafs from his Montreal days. But, you know, Phil's one of those quiet guys, goes out and plays 17 minutes a night. He plays great defensively. You mentioned the partnership with Trevor Moore, who's been – you know, once Trevor got healthy, despite the fact that he is a great guy, and I got to know him over the last season, just a really, really good guy. You don't root for teams, but you certainly root for individual players. Trevor Moore is one of the nicest guys I've ever covered. And he's been great. I think 17, 18 goals. It's just been a nice season for Trevor Moore. So the issue with the Kings is lately their offense has kind of dried up a little, and it's not necessarily the forwards. They haven't scored a goal from their blue line, I think, in the last seven games. So I think the last time they scored a goal was from a defenseman was Gavrikov in the overtime loss to the Islanders that broke their road streak. So they're not getting a ton of offense from the blue line. And what you've been seeing with respect to this team is that from the blue line, they haven't been able to get their shots through. I had a statistic the other day. Now, the first thing that's ridiculous is Kings and the Vegas Golden Knights have completed their season series, right? Kings haven't even played Vancouver yet. They've played one against Edmonton, and now they're three-game season series. But in that series, Vegas blocked 86 Kings shots. And I asked Todd McClellan about that. Like, what's the deal with the defense not scoring? He says, yeah, we got to find a better way to get the puck to the net from the blue line. So that is a one area of opportunity that in the early 6 weeks of the season, they were getting goal production, but they haven't got a goal from Matt Roy, who had nine last year. They haven't got a goal yet from Jordan Spence. So that's the difficulty. So when you see the team, they were second or third in scoring in offense, like the first month of the season. Now they dropped to seventh. Part of the reason is they're not getting any production from the blue line.
Now, that is a problem, and I know Clark's going to jump on this one, is for the Maple Leafs as well. And if maybe LA can figure out what's ailing them, maybe they can pass that note along to the Toronto Maple Leafs on the back end. Outside of Morgan Riley, it is a dark, abysmal hole on the back end for the Toronto Maple Leafs. So you don't have to worry about defensive scoring for the Leafs. Obviously, we do have some weapons up front. You're pretty familiar with the big names, but some guys are starting to find their own stride, too, in the Domies, in the Yarncroaks, in the Nick Robertsons as well, but obviously our fourth line is a mishmash. We just sat our supposed Philip Deneau light center the other night in David Camp. So
David Camp, of course.
he'll be motivated. Listen, I like David Camp. When he's on for the faceoff dot, when he's doing his thing, he's a good player, and he's what you need in your bottom six. But when he's not, he's not bringing much of anything else to your lineup, and that makes it difficult, especially when you throw him out there to rely on those defensive faceoffs. Now, I do see that we are facing probably Cam Talbot tonight.
Yep.
He's playing pretty good. You talk about dipping in the fountain of youth and reemerging himself. This guy's got, a 924 save percentage this season. Yep. If there's anything that's ailing a team, like you talk about the defense of the LA King not scoring, just face the Toronto Maple Leafs. That always seems to spin around, and teams figure it out, whether it's a goalie getting a fresh start, whether it's a rookie, whether it's D-scoring, first goals, the Leafs are on the ledger for all the history books for all of those things. So if it ails the team, play the Leafs. They'll figure it out. But, Clark, you're going to jump in on something David was saying there, so go ahead.
Yeah, two quick things for you, Dennis. Cam Talbot, like we just talked about, against Martin Jones. A year ago, if you would have said tonight's goalie matchup would have been Cam Talbot for the Kings and Martin Jones for the Leafs, I think we all would have said we were all crazy. But Cam Talbot has been sensational for the Kings this year. I've picked him up in every fantasy league. Thanks, Cam. And Martin Jones has been, I'm going to say, a steadying presence. I'm not going to say he's been great, but he's been a steadying presence. But he's been a thorn in the side of the Kings for a decade with the Sharks, et cetera, et cetera.
Yep.
So what's the biggest thing for Cam Talbot this year? And I guess facing an old friend in Martin Jones for the Kings, what do you expect them to kind of go for?
I think the biggest thing for Cam was health. Remember, last season in Ottawa, he was hurt twice, right? And the season before that, he was a 913, 915 save percentage guy the prior two seasons in Ottawa. So health, number one. Number two, this team doesn't give up much. I think they lead the league in least amount of high-danger chances against. And so what you're not – like, Cam's has a great record. I think he's won 12 games or something like that. I don't know what it is. But he hasn't stolen a game. Like, he gets great run support. He makes the saves. Here's the thing, Clark. Last year, the medium and low-danger chances – this time of year was getting through Jonathan Quick and Cal Peterson. And that's why you saw Phoenix Copley, who's now out on LTIR. He came in and helped save the season because he made the saves he was supposed to make. Cam has been great. He's been solid in the room. He's a really good guy. He's one of the leaders. He's made the saves he needs to make. Like, he hasn't put up a 50 save performance to steal a game because the Kings play too good of a defense to allow 50 shots in a game. So that's part of the issue, and that's why the success has been there. And he's stopping the shots that are getting through that were like medium sized shots, let's say from 40 feet out from the slot that were getting either through Quick or Peterson. They're not getting through this year. And when you look at the penalty kill, I think it was 27th or 28th last year, and now it's first. Yeah. The same amount of chances. They're getting more saves. You know, it's amazing, guys. Sometimes it's just getting saves and you win games. And a lot of that has to do with what the Kings, what their defense does. But they're getting the saves that they need to get. They're not getting those soul-sucking. Like, you're up 2-0, you give up a goal from 50 feet that shouldn't go in. That's not happening this season for LA. So the question is, what do you do with Cam Talbot? I know what he wants, an extension, not at a ton of money, but they're certainly going to go into the market and spend more money in goaltending next season than this season. And the Phoenix Copley injury gives Data Riddish a shot, and he's 2-0, Dave, but a big save. Dave's beaten two teams. Actually, he's beaten one team. He's beaten San Jose twice.
Yeah.
So at some point, you got to start playing better teams, right? But the question is, how much can Cam play? He can't play more than, let's say, 54, 55 games. So Dave or Phoenix Copley comes back, got to come in and give them like 25 games of decent goaltending. If Riddish can't do that, then, you know, Blake might look for something at the trade deadline with respect to a third goaltender.
So last one for me here, Dennis, because I know you don't have a whole lot of time. I'm sitting here watching Washington and Pittsburgh right now play against each other. You know, those two teams and the Kings were powerhouses during the same era, I'll say. Right. The Kings have come a full circle, and they're back at the top while Washington and Pittsburgh are sputtering. Kopitar's still around. Doughty's still around. But what has been the biggest thing for the Kings in terms of getting back to where, the level they kind of were at 5, 6, 7, 8 years ago, when they were at the top of the league every single year, whereas these other teams are just aging out, it seems?
Well, patience, number one, because they had patience with a guy, even a guy like Adrian Kempe, who when Tom McClellan came to town was a, 15-goal scorer playing center on the third line. And they, he was playing out of position. They put him on the left wing with Kopitar. They got chemistry. He's now a very dangerous goal scorer. So part of it's chemistry. Part of it is sliding guys in correctly. Because the perception, Clark, is that, the Kings drafted really well. They drafted high picks. That's how they got here. That's not how they got here. Yes, they've had some success with respect to the drafts. But they traded for Fiala. They traded for Dubois, despite his lack of performance. Right? They signed Deneau as a free agent. They traded for Arvidsson, who, if he comes back, is going to be a huge addition. So it's patience, and they just slotted guys in, and they had patience. And I give the coach a lot of credit. There's a lot of guys who have emerged under Todd McClellan. I know there's a faction of Kings fans that don't want to hear that, that think that Taj would be fired after every game they lose. But you look at Kempe, you look at Byfield, you look at a guy like Mikey Anderson, who was a fifth-round pick. Now he's a top pair defenseman, 22 minutes a night. Matt Roy was drafted in the seventh round. He's emerged. There's a lot of players who have emerged under this coaching staff. And so it's patience. It's coaching. There's a lot of talent here, and they're going for it. Like, this is the year that, it's funny. They're celebrating the 10th anniversary of winning their last cup. It's also the last time they won a playoff series. And it's winning time. Like, there's no excuses. Like, if the Kings play Edmonton again in the playoffs, they got to beat them. You can't go three seasons in a row losing to Edmonton. I think this team is certainly better equipped because they're better defensively. They're better on the PK. Maybe they get an offensive boost if Arvidsson can come back from his back surgery, which they expect maybe in about 6 weeks, which would be a nice deadline add. But it's a combination of things, Clark. It's not just one thing. And it's taken a minute. It hasn't like they turned this around in 1 year. Like, I was there like three seasons ago, like during like COVID, what you'd watch the team and they go down to the Leafs 2-0 at home in 5 minutes into the game, and the game was over. That's not the case anymore. They're not overmatched anymore. And they have depth. Like, you talk about the Leafs. What are the Leafs? They appear to be a top heavy team. The Kings aren't. The Kings are going to roll four lines and use three pairs tonight. That's what they've done all season. It's going to continue to work. And they get guys like Grundstrom and Lazat and even Trevor Lewis coming back. So, and that's what wins, right? It's great to have superstars on your team, but it appears like a team like Vegas, last year they didn't have a 30-goal scorer on their team. Marcessault, I think, had 28 or 29. It's the depth that the Kings have. It's the trust between the coaching staff and the team. That's been a lot of their success so far this season.
Well, let's flip that on its head. I'll ask my last question and let you go because I know you got to roll. Look at the Leafs. And I say, we just talked about the Kings and all the things they're doing right. For you, what do the Leafs need to do? Because this season looks like it's starting to be that Brian Burke 18-wheeler heading for the cliff. And it's not pretty right now. Obviously, they've won one game in the last six. Their goaltending's abysmal. The defense isn't looking right. What do they need to do to turn this around? And I said it today. Maybe drop Mitch Marner to that third line. Get balanced scoring through your top nine. Have stars all the way through. Maybe that does something for you. Clicks to the third line, makes it a more scoring threat. But what should the Leafs be looking to do here?
Mitch Marner, I'm not sure the family would like him being dropped to the third line, so I'm not sure that's really, really going to happen.
He might even know how the family operates.
We do.
Yeah.
James, I think here's the thing. Like, they're going to make the playoffs, right? So let's talk about this team at the trade deadline. What are they going to do at the trade deadline? Is the goaltending still going to be abysmal? Or is it going to still be a ton of question marks? I don't know. Like, so could they get out of the East? Look, here's the thing. If I'm Keefe, I put on the board every day two words: Florida Panthers. They got in as the 8 seed. They got hot. They found a goaltender, and they won games, and they got to a cup final. So I'm not in panic mode, right? I mean, here's when you start panicking. If at least don't finish in the top three in the Atlantic, start panicking, right? Are you going to panic at game 34, 35? Yeah, I know it's Toronto. It's very reactionary. The media is going nuts, whatever. I wouldn't worry about it. I think you have to be healthy. You have to find another goaltender. You're going to have to find a goaltender to make saves. And
that's the thing. Saves at key times are not happening in Leafland.
Yeah.
When Joel Wool's not in that. Joel Wool was looking pretty darn good.
Oh, yeah. No, he would be solid. But is Martin Jones going to be your guy? I mean, no. But again, you have 60% of the game season left. So I wouldn't be panicking now. I think Tree has to assess where this team will be like a month out from the trade deadline. Like, what's my opportunity? Where are my gaps right now? Right now, you hit lulls, you go up and down. You know, Kings are playing 500 hockey for the last 3 weeks. Nobody's panicking here because you know you have a good enough team with talent. It's a question is like, can this team, and I keep going back to this in Toronto, like, are they really committed to playing the defensive style of hockey you need to play to win in the playoffs? I don't see it. I don't know if they have the personnel. I don't have the mind. I think it's even about the personnel. It's about the mindset. Like, are you willing to lay down in front of a block shot like an Alec Martinez or Pedro Angel does in the playoffs? Are you willing to do that? Are you willing to back check when you miss a 2-on-1 and come back and get back into the play? Are you defensively responsible? I'm not sure that's in this team's DNA. And I think that's the biggest concern if I have, not about personnel, but do they have the DNA to win in the playoffs? They're going to make the playoffs, but then what's the expectation? Like, you got to go deep. You should go to a conference final, not to a Stanley Cup final. I'm not sure. Like, when I watch this team play, I see all the big names. I'm saying, do they really play the style of play that succeeds in the playoffs? I'm not sure.
One guy that has impressed me, and I'll leave it at this, is Austin Matthews. His 200-foot game has grown. Yep. Block shots have grown.
100%.
That is a guy who's looking like, hey, I need to start to learn to take this team on my back, a la Crosby, McKinnon, all those guys who had it click in their head, hey, if I don't do this and do everything, basically, whether it's drop the mitts or whatever, you're not going to go far. So I have to be that guy that shows everybody else that, hey, I'm the top dog here, but I'm still willing to lay down in front of a laser. And if it takes me out, it takes me out, but I block that shot.
All you need to do is pay everybody $13.5 million then, and you'll be fine.
They're about to pay William Nylander $11.25 million, so.
Hey, the cap's going.
Time to block some shots.
The cap's going up.
Dennis,
that solves everything, right? The cap's going up. Right.
Hey, Leafs got the money. I always appreciate you jumping on. Enjoy the game tonight, my friend. We'll have you on maybe throughout the season again.
Thanks, James and Clark. Appreciate it. Great stuff on Offside Hockey Talk.
We'll talk to you soon. All right, yeah. So, I mean, you look at what Dennis just said about the Leafs. I mean, you look at the Leafs and say, hey, maybe they need to find some more guys with that proper DNA. We all agree that Mr. Austin Matthews is on that trend. But the Leafs, as we talked to Dennis, are on that Western swing, Clark. And I want to know for you this week, we got LA, the Ducks, and the Sharks. What are the Leafs going to come out looking like this week? I think we see Hildeby tomorrow. I'm just saying. I think we do see the Hildebeest in the crease. I think Sheldon Keefe right now is doing everything he can to deflect all of the media and energy away from Hildebeest by saying Jones may play to keep that calm. And one thing I want to say before I get your prediction here. We need to go back to the Lou Lamoriello ways of one thing. When you are a rookie, you don't speak to the media. The media is not allowed to get to you, period. They're not allowed to drill you. They're not allowed to ask you questions. And I know that they want players to be out there and talking, but even when Austin Matthews and Mitch Marner and William Nylander, all those guys were rookies, they did not face the media. That was a Lou Lamoriello rule. The veterans came out, whether it was Leo Komarov or et cetera, down the line. So I'd like it to go back to that. I don't want the Hildebeest in front of any media at all. I want him to be able to just focus on his game and not have to answer all of these questions. Because it seems like that is something, too, that Ilya Samsonov had an issue with. Because he even said when he won that first game, hey, guys, it's been a while since I talked to you, right? Because all those things, the hoopla. But anyways, to bring it back to this week, what is your prediction, my friend?
Yeah, well, you know what? I wouldn't be totally shocked if they give Martin Jones all three games on this trip. He's very familiar with the division. He played in it for, 11 years or something. And just given the fact that Hildeby is so young and just got here,
Oh, but you shouldn't baby him, Clark. That's what my comment section says. You shouldn't baby him. He's not a baby. He's 22.
You're right. But I also think, you know what? Martin Jones hasn't played a ton this year. He's an established, experienced veteran. He can handle one back-to-back and then play his old team. I think he can handle it. If he can't, why is he here? And you know what? It's 1 week. So I would say if it was up to me, it's clearly not. But if it was, I would give Martin Jones all 3 games this week and let Hildo just kind of be with the team on the West Coast road trip. And then I don't know what the next game is. Can you look at the schedule and tell me what the game after the Sharks is? The Sharks again?
The Sharks in Toronto on Monday.
That's what I give Hildo be. Give Hildo be the home game against that team. That's what I would do.
See, here's my argument for you on that one. I would rather get my feet wet as an NHL goaltender away from what could potentially be the Boo Birds of the Scotiabank Arena if you lay an egg, because it does not matter who is in the crease. If you're young, old, middle-aged, a century, Curtis Joseph, it don't matter. They will boo you if the game is bad. And how totally. Will that affect a young Hildeby?
That's fair. No, I get that for sure. And you don't get that on the road, hypothetically, but... I think that this team is in the middle of, I think this is the hurricane, I think, at the moment. I think we're kind of in the middle of it, not at the eye of the storm where it's all calm. I think this is kind of, we're kind of in the middle of it right now. Everything just seems to be chaotic at the moment. Nothing seems to be fully clicking at the moment. There's been good times in the past. There's been bad times. There's been worse times. I'll say that. I think there's been worse times, but this season specifically. But I think right now it's just kind of everything's in a tornado or something at the moment. Everything's flying around. Nobody's quite sure of anything at the moment. Everybody's confidence seems to be a little bit shot, like their feet aren't on the ground, so to speak, if the tornado reference. And I just think that this team needs to just settle the heck down. Something about this team just has them on edge. I don't see them looking confident like they have in the past. And something's going on. So I don't know what it is. It's hard to say with some of these things in the locker room. We don't know what's going on behind the doors. We don't know what's going on with the coaching staff, the messaging the coaching staff is preaching. I've had this one thought that maybe there's some mixed messaging coming from the coaching staff. We've seen this year, all year long, we've seen issues with bad line changes leading to penalties. We've seen issues with missed assignments. We've seen all this stuff all year long, and it just seems like, you know, maybe there is some sort of mixed messaging coming from the coaching staff. I'd be really curious to know if that is the case or not. But either way, I think that this week overall will be kind of the turning point one way or the other. If it's a bad week, I think we see action sooner than later, even though it's not an easy market to make any moves in whatsoever. But I think if this is a bad week, I think the panic button gets hit a little bit. That's kind of where I'm at with this season right now. I'm trying to keep my head level in terms of being an over anxious fan. I'm trying to keep that level-headed approach to that. But at the same time, with the way things have been going for a couple weeks, at least 3 weeks, and just overall in the season, James, I think you'd agree with me that it's been, I'm going to say, underwhelming. It hasn't been terrible. I mean, they're still putting up points. They're still getting points in a lot of games. But I think it's been underwhelming. And I think if they have a bad week on their California trip here, especially against the Ducks and the Sharks, I mean, LA is a great team. But if they have a bad week, I think it's going to be panic button for a lot of people, especially in the offices of the team. So I would hope for everybody's sake that it's a, you know, they have a really good game here against the Kings tonight, and then they can handle business against the Ducks and Sharks. And then you get a home game against the Sharks again. It kind of gives you a chance to get rolling a little bit, and but otherwise it could be heads could be rolling.
Well, for me, for this week, Clark, I'll give you my numbers. I'm going to say 3-0-0.
Yeah.
And why do I say that? I say this because there is a lot of tornado stuff going on. There is a lot of, whoa, this guy might get moved. This guy could get brought up, this, sure, that, sure, and other stuff. Too much going on. So for the Leafs right now, I think what you're going to see is a consistent game. I'm going to say they're going to keep it simple. They're going to use the KISS method. They're going to make sure the shots are blocked, lanes are clogged. They are going to do all of the small little things that I've been so angry about all year that I keep bringing up to you. It's the little things, the attentions to detail that I think you will start to see. And to touch on the fact that Mitch Marner's family wouldn't be happy with him on the third line, who gives a rat's ass? You are in the business of winning hockey games and building a competitive hockey team. If Mitch Marner on the third line makes the team more competitive, Paul Marner goes suck an egg, because this team needs it to be that way. That's the way it should be. You should not be worried about feelings. You should not be worried about how guys are going to react with their families or on social media. If you don't like it here as a Toronto Maple Leaf, don't let the door hit you on the ass on the way out. But if you want to be a part of the solution to fix the problem, play on whatever goddamn line you're put on and put up points and do your damn job, because that is what you are paid to do. And I'm usually sunshine and rainbows, but to hear a comment like that from Dennis drives me nuts, because if that is the narrative, you are so worried about making Mitch Marner unhappy. Good, make him unhappy, make him uncomfortable. Maybe he'll perform. Maybe that's what you need to do. Get him out of his comfort zone and get him going, because that might be the ticket to lighten the fire under everybody's ass, period. Because obviously nothing else is working. And if you want Sheldon Keefe to have teeth, no pun intended, get it done. Let him do what he wants to do. He sat David freaking Camp, big whoop-de-frickin'-do. He sat a do-nothing who just put in another do-nothing. Because Pontus Holmberg is not good on the draw. David Camp is not good on the draw. You have a specific skill set, Mr. Camp, and that is to win draws for the Toronto Maple Leafs. If we didn't miss you out of the lineup, there's a problem. So do your job. That's my rant.
One thing I'll add to that, James, is Mitch Marner, we give him a lot of credit for his two-way play, like his penalty kill work, all the stuff that he does, not scoring. He's only got 38 points in 34 games. Now that, yes, 90% of the league would take that in a second. You would take over a point per game and run. And
I'm not saying he's underperforming. That's not my argument. My argument here is that if you need to balance out your lineup so that way you can roll, like Dennis just said, you can roll lines, that's what you have to do. Stop being so top-heavy.
No,
spread it out.
I agree with you. I am saying he's underperforming is what I'm saying. I think 38 points in 34 games for a guy who makes Mitch Marner money, that's not good enough, Mitch. Like, he's having a fine season. I'm not going to say he's been bad, but I'm just saying, you know what, when you're making the money that he is at this point in his career, this guy's a this is almost a 2 point per game style of player. Like, that's, we've seen it. We've not 2 points. That's extreme. But
yeah,
you know what
I mean? What you mean. Yeah.
100 point pace. He's on like an 88 point pace right now. Like, that's one of his worst seasons in the last few years. And so when you look at it that way, and the other thing is, you talk a lot about the depth and stuff of the team. Yarncroke, 17 points in 34 games. Domi's picked it up. I'll give him credit. He's got 21 points. Matthew Nyes, we talk about him a lot positively. You know, he's only got 14 points, 8 goals. Tyler Bertuzzi, 6 goals, 14 points. Nick Robertson has been okay, 11 points, 23 games. So, I mean, half a point per game, that's fine.
For a third-line guy, not too shabby.
Especially for his role and everything, right? David Kampf, 7 points. Fourth line, not playing with much, but 7 points. And then you mentioned it, and I thank you for calling me out during Dennis in a good way, saying that the defensive production has been terrible. Morgan Riley, 27 points in 34 games, good. And I think every Leafs fan this season, or at least a good chunk of majority of Leaf fans, would say that Morgan Riley has been playing like playoff Morgan Riley.
Yep.
There has not
been any complaints I've seen from Leafs Nation on
Morgan Riley. I hope not, because I think he's been great. Outside of Morgan Riley, and I'm not talking about defensively, I'm talking about point production, which is why I was a proponent, of John Klingberg's addition, because I thought he was going to help. And that was bad. But that's, you know what, you got to swing for the fences sometimes. Outside of Morgan Riley, Jake McCabe, 10 points in 28 games. TJ Brody, 7 points in 33 games, no goals. Connor Timmins, 6 points in 13 games. Okay, I'll take that, but he's also been really bad in other areas. Timothy Liljegren, 6 points in 17 games. Mark Giordano, 6 points in 22 games. John Klingberg, I'll just won't even say that one. Legason, 3 points in 21 games. Benoit, 0 points in 20 games. Like, I get that everyone and their grandma wants us to get a big, rugged defenseman who can be physical. I get it. So do I. But I also just can't emphasize enough that the Leafs are getting, and I know goal scoring is not our biggest issue at the moment, but the Leafs are getting almost no production from anyone on their blue line who isn't named Morgan Riley. And that's good. I'm going to keep pointing it out until something changes with that. Not that it's a bad thing, but if you look at some of their defensive struggles, I think you've seen that they can't get the puck out of their own zone sometimes. And I think zone exits is a big deal, even though people think that's a garbage stat. I think zone exits are important. And when you when you have guys who can simply not move the puck, it doesn't work, especially when you have all that talent up the front, all that talent, and you can't get it to them. That's a problem. And it leads to defensive issues being exposed. Thank you for attending my TED Talk.
Yes. And the other thing I'll add to your thing there, Clark, is the fact you are playing. Listen, TJ Brody, we all know he's not the TJ Brody he used to be. I'm not bashing the guy, but I'm a big proponent, and you know this, of putting guys in positions to succeed. TJ Brody being up with Morgan Riley is not the spot for him now. He needs to be a four on this team. He needs to be on that second pair. You need to find someone to play with Morgan Riley. And I say this because then you could start shifting proper defensive responsibilities to these guys. If you limit the minutes of TJ Brody, I think you see his play come back up. But if you pair him with a guy like Timothy Liljegren, who can move the puck and then does not have the fear of maybe being exposed or getting caught up ice or whatever he's doing with the puck, because he can wheel with it, no problem. If you have TJ Brody on limited minutes back there with a guy like him or even Connor Timmins, maybe you get to insulate that player properly and allow them to thrive more offensively. But you need to find that guy to go with Morgan Riley to slot everybody down to where they need to be properly on this defense. That's my look at it. That's the way I think of it. And if that's getting a Chris Tanev to play with Riley, to move Brody down to sit with someone offensively, whether it's Liljegren, Timmins, you name it. Hey, if you can get Timmins into the lineup moving the puck and have someone to cover for his defensive woes, then I think you're starting to talk, okay, that may have what made him that good during the preseason. You know, he was the Connor leading the scoring. It was a funny joke. So if we can get that Connor Timmins back with a good steady defense partner, whether it's Geo, whether it's Brody or someone brought in, or McCabe for that matter, when you start slotting guys in where they belong, they look like they belong. And that's just a simple fact of it. The other thing I want to talk to you about, we talked about moving Marner. We talked about the Hildebeest. By the way, the sandwich board went out the window. We've gone up and down this thing, fourth, light, left, and center. So it was just simply talking points today, folks. We're not going by order today. But anyways, the Willie rumors are out there. Elliot Friedman, me and you were exchanging about this a couple of hours ago. About how Friedman kind of stokes the flames every now and then. Now Nick Kiprios and Justin Bourne, I put the clip out today, you know, basically saying they're getting close. They want to get it done by the All-Star, talking Pastrnak-type money, which a lot of people's minds just blew. By the way, I don't know if you guys know, but William Nylander is, what, top five in NHL scoring, tied with a guy named Connor McDavid. Not too shabby right now. Now, is that sustainable? Who knows?
Nylander is better than McDavid, confirmed. Is that what you're saying, James? Confirmed.
Well, also, Pastrnak is better than both of them because he's ahead of them by 2 points. So, But for me, I look at it like this and say, okay, the William Nylander rumors, where there's smoke, there's got to be a little bit of fire because everybody is talking about it. But notice how everybody's talking about it in a positive light. It's not that he's leaving or the Leafs and him are far apart or there's negativity between one side or the other or, you know, maybe he's going to wait till the end of the season. Everybody is on the same talking point. He's staying. They're talking. They're close. They want to get it done quickly. What's different here? Why isn't it like before? Because usually these things are doom and gloom in Toronto. This one seems like sunshine and rainbows, man.
So my favorite person in this entire saga, I'm going to call it a saga, to follow, and I'm talking like the entire career of William Nylander. My favorite person to follow has been Nick Kiprios because I love Nick Kiprios. I've booked him on the other show I work for several times. He's a great guy. He really, really is. But watching his opinion on William Nylander change time and time and time and time again. Oh, look at him. He's a great guy. We got to get him on the show at some point again.
He's been on here a couple times, man.
Yeah, we got to get him on. He's literally, if you, I would talk to Nick Kipper, you could talk to him for like 2 hours and then be like, oh, I've asked you one question and it was the best 2 hours of my life. Like he's not that he talks too much, but like you could just, he's a great talk. He's a great conversation.
Doesn't become boring. Nothing becomes stale. No. Everything is exciting. And he has stories for days.
Oh dude. If you want to hear some great Rangers stories from the early 90s, there's nobody better. But what I will say is watching his opinion change on William Nylander from early in Nylander days, mid Nylander days, and then to now is it's amazing. This is coming from the guy who wanted to trade him for Nick Ritchie and Brandon Montour, which Montour, honestly, would probably be a good fit on the Leafs right now. Mm-hmm. But at the time, it was nonsensical. And Nick Ritchie is now getting suspended in Switzerland or whatever he's doing. So, but William Nylander is now, in Nick Kiprios' opinion, playing too good. And he's outpricing himself for the team. Because before, it was he wasn't worth the amount that he was asking for and they should trade him. Get him out of here now because he's asking for too much money. And now, Nick Kiprios' comments today, I believe, and I think he's even put an article out, if I'm not mistaken. The article is, or the headline was from Nick Kiprios, that he is playing so well that the Leafs can't pay him enough. And that's just watching the evolution of the Nick Kiprios versus William Nylander relationship. It's hilarious. And I love it. And I think Kiprios would probably be the first one to tell you that, you know what? People's opinions are allowed to change, and his probably has.
I can hear his voice literally saying that.
Yeah, yeah. Opinions, people can change opinions and things happen. And you know what? In all fairness, William Nylander, in my opinion, because I've watched, I'm not going to say every game, but I've watched a good 60, 70% of the games of his career on TV or whatever. He has probably evolved more than, as a player, more than Marner or Matthews. I really do believe that. I think William Nylander early in his career was a turnover machine. He once he didn't have the puck, there was not much that he was going to be doing. And now you see him out there and he's tenacious. Like, he's not physical necessarily, but he's such a good puck retriever, et cetera, et cetera. And this, he's a totally different player now than he was as a 22-23-year-old fresh-faced kid from Sweden. I think he's a much, much more developed and complete hockey player. And his development has been amazing. Now, what I will say is 11.25 to me still seems a little high. But if that's the number that it comes in at, I saw a great tweet today from, I think it was Jen on Twitter. And I think her Twitter handle is, you'd know her to see her. I'm sure you've seen her lots. Jen Tavarner.
Yes.
Nylander, yeah. Or whatever her name is, on there. She mixed Tavares, Matthews, Nylander, and Marner's names. She said, if we can get another elite superstar who's just getting into the peak of his game under contract for 8 more seasons in this city, the number really doesn't matter. We got him for 8 more years, and that's another great player on this team that you can build around for years and years to come. And I think that's another kind of, when Austin Matthews signed his deal, my biggest thing was, you know what? We have Austin Matthews for 5 more years after this. That's all I really am caring about. The number is overly important. Now, I know with Nylander, it's different because it's a bigger gap between what he's getting paid now and what he's going to get paid. But I still think if you can get him under contract for 8 years, do it. Just get it done and get it over with, and let's move on and have some fun with them.
Well, that's what Kiprios said too in that clip too. I didn't get the whole thing in there because obviously it would have took a long time. But yeah, get this player under contract, get it done, get it over with, and move forward. The cap's going up. You'll figure it out from there. And there's obviously money coming off the books as well. The last one for this show, guys, we're going to talk about this. Is Keith on the hot seat here? 1 win in the last 6. A lot of Leafs Nation is freaking out. Here's the thing. For me, I look at Sheldon Keith and say, fastest 300 wins as a coach, or 300 games, 200 wins, not too shabby. Is the playoff success there yet? No. But you look at guys like John Cooper. He did the same thing. It took him a long while to finally get rolling and have success. They had to find the right chemistry. So to me, Sheldon Keefe is not on the hot seat. So are Leafs Nation. And if you're bringing someone in, please tell me who's got better success than him. outside of one guy, Craig Berube, Gerard Gallant does not, Bruce Boudreau does not. They all have the same first-round pedigree as Mr. Sheldon Keefe. So who are you bringing in that has this vast experience that is going to change the landscape of the Toronto Maple Leafs to propel them to the next round? Because here's the problem. You bring in a new coach, he has new strategies, new ways to play. Team has to go through the growing pains of figuring it out. Sure, you might get the dead cat bounce of a couple wins. But the thing is, everything needs to change. And all the players are then under evaluation. And everything in the lineup will start to change again. This team can and will hit stride under Sheldon Keefe this season. I know there'll be moves before the deadline, because Trey probably wants to get the people in there early enough to make an impact, not just at the deadline with a few games remaining. And Joe Woll will be back, folks. And we don't know what we have in the Hildebeest. Maybe you have the brick wall and the beast running the crease for the Leafs. That's my two cents on Sheldon Keefe.
Yeah, I've been more back and forth on Sheldon Keefe this year than maybe a lot of people. I just can't figure out whether I feel like he's the problem, or if it's just this group that isn't quite meshing, or something's not working, or is it the assistant coaches? They just, again, replaced both assistant coaches again this year, which has been like the third year in a row that they've replaced the assistant coaches, I feel like, which I don't know how much of an impact that does have in the NHL. I would love to talk to a player who can tell me how much impact the assistant coaches have, and how much impact changing assistant coaches as often as the Leafs have has an impact. Because really, if you look at it, I think of, you know, like you mentioned Tampa Bay with John Cooper. I feel like, maybe I'm wrong here, but I feel like they had the same assistant coaches for like 3 or 4 years in a row. And then you get the same messaging. Like I said earlier, like I feel like there's some mixed messaging going on, or something with Mike Van Ryan and with Guy Boucher, or something's going on where the two aren't working together well or something. It's hard for me to say exactly. Like I said, I'd love to talk to a player and ask them how much impact assistant coaches truly have on a day-to-day basis, or season-to-season basis. I'd love to know. But with Keefe specifically, I think the hot-button, easy thing to say is that the head coach isn't doing a good enough job. And like you said, it's hilarious. He's, in terms of coaching stats, he's got some of the best of all time. Now, can you put the argument out there that he inherited a really talented roster that scores a lot of goals and wins games? For some of those,
you can say that though, but why didn't that work for Mike Babcock then?
Yeah, well, true. And you know, for some of those 300 wins, that was probably the case. But I feel like you said, for just like with Babcock, just because you have a good team doesn't mean you get a lot of wins. Coaching does matter, and how you do stuff does matter. And I think that there's parts of that to the Sheldon Keefe lore with the roster stuff, but at the same time, he's also been there for it, and you got to win the games too. Everyone has a job, and he's been doing his statistically quite well. Now, if they were to fire him now, which I can't see a scenario at all during this season where they would fire him. I just can't see any scenario where that would happen.
Every DM owes their coach a trade.
Yeah, sure. You know what? And exactly. And I think that Tree Living hasn't done what he wants to do yet with this team. And you know what? I just don't think that firing Sheldon Keefe during this season makes much sense. Unless they go through like a 10-game losing streak and something terrible happens. And that's,
if they bottom out and go off the cliff like the 18-wheeler joke I made, then yeah, no problem. Then bring in Hordachuk again.
Guy Boucher can step up and be the head coach, and I'd be fine with that because he's had a decent career himself. But I just think, I don't think he's going to get fired. I think that the pressure and the hot seat, like you said, the pressure is going to get more intense. The hot seat's probably going to get hotter, but I don't think he's getting fired during the season unless something Detroit Pistons losing streak style happens. I could see it then. But other than that, if this team keeps scrapping together points and getting into overtimes and winning most games, more games than they lose, I just don't see him getting fired.
Yeah, I don't either. Well, to finish this one off, my friends, I don't see anyone getting fired off of this. I think they're going to get fired up. If you, right now, go with our friends over at the Hockey Podcast Network and check out DraftKings. Right now, if you download the app and use the code THPN, new customers can get $150 instantly in bets for betting just $5 on hockey. That's code THPN, only on DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NHL. The crown is yours. Bonus bets set to expire 168 hours after issuance. Gambling problems? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available. For your problem gambling, call 888-788-9777 or visit ccp.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort, 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bet set to expire 168 hours after issuance. ctkng.com/hockey for eligibility, deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources. NHL and the NHL Shield are registered trademarks of the National Hockey League. Copyright 2024, all rights reserved. Well, folks, that wraps us up for tonight. The numbers were great. The folks were here. Love the fact we had Dennis on as well. Clark, 2024 is going to be a fun year for this show. Looking forward to it, buddy.
Yeah, well, obviously, anytime, I say this all the time, but thanks for having me. Love being a part of the crew with Dylan and Pete. And I think, like I said earlier, I'm just going to say it, this week, this could be a turning point in the season in a couple different ways. It could go good or bad, but I think we're going to have a whole different perspective on things come this time next week. I'll say that.
Well, let's check it out on Sunday night, the Leafs weekender here for Offside. Myself, hopefully Clark, and I know Dylan will be there. Sunday night, check it out, 8 p.m. Eastern. We'll see you there live. But this is Offside Hockey Talk, where the Maple Leafs and hockey come to talk.